www.aldhuhurus.org. That's www.aldhuhurus.org. And take the future into your own hands. One Africa, one nation. aldhuhurus.org. And take the future into your own hands. One Africa, one nation. Uhuru, and welcome to Solidarity Not Charity, the show of the African People's Solidarity Committee here on uhururadio.com every Sunday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. My name is Harris Daniels. I'm a member of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and we want to thank the African People's Socialist Party for allowing us this time today on Uhuru Radio, this time every week. The African People's Solidarity Committee is an organization that works under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, which leads the Uhuru movement. APSC works in white communities and with allies of the African Liberation Movement, building solidarity for the movement for liberation, reparations, and justice for African people in Africa, the U.S., and around the world. And today's show is really all about the work that we do in this exciting movement, building a stance of solidarity with the African-led movement that's truly changing the world. We've already heard on uhururadio.com today from the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party in the Uhuru movement, Chairman Omalu Yeshitela, who has just returned from Kenya in the historic African Socialist International East African Regional Conference. And the work that the movement is doing right now is incredible, from Africa to cities in the U.S. in which myself and my comrades on the show today reside. We will all be coming together in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on Saturday, May 2nd, for the Uhuru Solidarity Movement National Conference. So I'm really excited, to talk about the conference today and talk about the stance and solidarity that we build every day in our communities. And I really want to welcome on the show today two Uhuru Solidarity Movement organizers, Wendy Snyder in Oakland, California. Uhuru, Wendy.
Uhuru, Harris.
And Allison Haney in Philadelphia. Uhuru, Allie.
Uhuru,
it's really exciting to be, connecting all of the work that we do every day because, as we heard on the show, we should just get right into this discussion. We heard on the Voices of the People Africa Live show today, you turn on the news and you turn on CNN, and what is it that you hear immediately about African people but that they're criminals or they're pirates as what we've been fed about African people in Somalia, most recently, fishermen who are just trying to get their resources, and it's important to have the right analysis. And as North Americans and Europeans and other people who are not working class Africans, it's difficult to get that analysis unless you know about this movement and are working in this movement with the perspective of African internationalism as developed as by Chairman Omali Yeshitela and the point of view of the African working class. But we have a responsibility as organizers to put out this stance and put out this analysis in our community. So it's very important that we talk about it on this show and also in our communities about the fact that African people are not the real criminals and not the real pirates, but in fact about how the system, the North American and European system, is one that is a criminal system and is built on the attack on African people. So we need to take the stand and have the proper analysis. So I wanted to discuss that first about how we can combat that lynch mob mentality that's coming out of the media. Right now we're seeing it around pirates and African people in Somalia, but other topics as well, and about how we're taking that stand in our respective cities. So I want to sort of put that topic on the table and discuss that right now. Do either of you have a comment you want to kick off with?
Well, I can say something that just I've been thinking about with this question of the so-called pirates in Somalia, and I just related to just the crisis in the crisis of imperialism. I mean, we know that this is related to the crisis of imperialism, I should say, and that African people. That Omali Yeshitela really summed up brilliantly, the attack on a particular region of Africa that they call Somalia, and the fact that the imperialist U.S. has been there to take the oil and so they create the fiction around these are pirates when in fact they are the real pirates. And it just called to mind I overheard a conversation that someone that I know was having with someone who actually makes their money off of a company that works with the Port of Oakland, and so how it relates to the situation here in Oakland. I was just thinking about the fact that Oakland has, we're going to talk about Oakland in particular in a little bit more depth in a few minutes. But Oakland has, I think it's the second largest port on the West Coast. I don't have my facts straight on that. It's a huge port, and right. What has happened with the Port of Oakland is that since the days of the Black Panther Party, because of the challenge that the Black Panthers made to the imperialist system, the budget of the Port of Oakland was separated from the City of Oakland, which is quite incredible, because it's called the Port of Oakland, but yet it's a completely separate budget. And so how this relates is that someone that I know, I overheard this conversation asking this man who makes his money off it. He works with some of the shipping. I think he works with the logistics of some of the shipping that comes into the Port of Oakland. And he asked him if the pirate situation had any effect on his business. And he said, well, not so much. What's happening is that these ships are simply going the other way. They're going around, all the way around Africa. And he says, of course, environmentally, that's not good, But it just struck me because, of course, it's had an effect, And that that African people struggling to control their land and resources, that's really, really what this is about, and even the ships, that come into the ports here in Oakland are having to deal with that question, and that we live in this worldwide economy that is so interconnected that we don't even realize, how much of effect that has. But I just, I think that the whole question of who the real pirates are, and even the whole glorification of pirates, that are really, as we have come to understand, are really were the privateers, the private businessmen that were involved in the slave trade, the Europeans who were involved in enslaving African people, and that's something that we need to be able to draw out. But it does affect us, and it's certainly tied to the whole criminalization of the African community, the way they're talking about them being gangsters, and I know it's the same attack on African people's right to resist the conditions of imperialism and colonialism that we see affecting African people in the U.S.
That's right. Yeah, and in our communities, you know, it's so important to put a human face on African people that are being, you know, put up there and criminalized on the news. And, you know, working in this movement, it's really, that's part of our work, is to really humanize and put forth the conditions that lead to these kinds of contradictions. And I know that's something that, you know, that particularly in Oakland, which we should discuss in just a moment, you know, the Uhuru movement has had to do very recently and has done successfully. Did you want to comment on the pirate situation, Allie?
Yes. And I really appreciate what Wendy, you were just saying as well, because I think it really ties into, I remember when I lived in Oakland, I work in the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, APSC, in Philly now, but, you know, for a long time, I was in the solidarity work in Oakland, and under Chairman Omali's leadership, just the parasitic relationship about the Port of Oakland itself, it was something he always raised, you know, about how during World War, you know, the Second Imperialist War, known as World War II, that African people built a ship a day, a liberty ship, you know, a warship, mm-hmm. every single day, the labor of African people. It just came back to me when you were talking about the Port of Oakland, mm-hmm. Wendy, because it's the same parasitic relationship, of course.
Right.
And, you know, just the labor. In fact, African people were brought to the Bay Area and Oakland to do that work. And, you know, but also, yeah, I just wanted to comment about, because I thought it was such a brilliant analysis and summation that Chairman Omali Oshetala was giving today on Voices of the People, African Lives, about the Somali situation, because, you know, and how he was saying, yes, this is the same exact situation as for African people in the U.S., because, you know, Penny was talking about, Penny Hess was saying that they're going to, you know, they brought the U.S. captured, they murdered, you know, three young Africans who were trying to get some of their resources back, and then captured the fourth one on that boat, and they're bringing this 15-year-old young African back to the U.S. for trial. And, you know, the chairman was saying that's not going to be any kind of special trial they give him. It's just going to be like every other African, young 15-year-old African in the U.S.
Right.
That's in prison. You know, the same kind of complete farcical kangaroo court trial. And are, you know, as we know, just, you know, whole economy built on imprisoning African people in this country. But it was just so startling how, you know, important how the chairman was raising, you know, how the U.S. has destroyed the economy, the independent economy in Somalia or, you know, throughout Africa, but he was directly talking about that part of East Africa, and which is the same as what the U.S. has done in the U.S., you know. Of course, in African communities, there is no economy. There is no, you know, viable economy. In fact, they've just pushed that back, what did they say, 5,000 years or something through the subprime attack on African people. You know, there's no economy in the African community. And then, you know, then they pollute the community. They destroy the economy. They take all the resources, take out the human beings, and then criminalize African people for struggling for their own survival and for their own economy and resisting their oppression. So it was very important, I felt like, how that whole situation was drawn out through the analysis of African internationalism, and definitely something we need to take to the white community.
Yes.
In a really strong way, because it's exactly the same, and it really shows concretely how that same, you know, colonial relationship exists.
Absolutely. Yeah, because that is, you know, the cornerstone of understanding the way forward, too, to understand the colonial relationship as it exists in the world, and how, you know, this system is so messed up and criminal, and it is really, you know, important for us to expose that and show that the future lies in the humanity of solidarity with African people and other oppressed people. and their liberation and their self-determination, which this movement has showed us. You know, I think when we get to talking about the conference that we're holding in Philadelphia on May 2nd, it's going to be centered around that and about how, you know, that translates into really concrete work. So I do want to sort of put a shout out for the conference right now, but we will get into much more detail about that later in the show. And I just want to put out before we move on in the discussion that people listening on the computer who want to listen by phone, if you have to leave the computer, can call in the U.S. 425-905. And, you know, you can also participate in this discussion by emailing us at dj@uhururadio.com. Skype, you can call through Skype at Uhuru Radio. Or in the U.S., you can call 727-565-1599. And there's other numbers and other ways to get in contact with us if you go to uhururadio.com or uhurunews.com. So I mentioned just a couple minutes ago that Wendy, you know, when talking about the pirate situation in Somalia and criminalizing African people that way, there's a real relationship between that and the way that the case involving Lavelle Mixon in Oakland has really unfolded. And it really required the forces in the Uhuru movement to put a human face on Lavelle Mixon, as well as many other African people who have been murdered by the police or have been involved in this colonial prison and police system. And some who have resisted. And I wanted to know if you could speak on some of that work that the Uhuru movement has had to take on and is continuing to take on, and, you know, defending the right of the African community to resist and, you know, putting forth the real issue, which is economic development in Oakland and throughout the world.
Yeah, Uhuru, yeah, I'd be happy to. So, I mean, just to backtrack a little bit, because this is important for people to understand the context of what's been going on in Oakland these past 4 months. And when Oscar Grant was killed, young African, 22 years old, on January 1st, he was killed in front of a large number of people on the scene, but in front of the world, because it was recorded on people's phones and video cameras, and this is a young African who was subdued face down on the platform of the BART, which is the Bay Area Rapid Transit, the transit system, and he was killed by a white cop, Johan Meserle, who shot him in the back at close range after when what came out later was that he, another police officer, Tony Peroni, I think is his first name, Tony, had punched Oscar Grant in the face. And this was just the brutality against the African community that was plain, you know, as plain as day for everyone to see how brutal, unjust this unnecessary killing and heavy-handed policing against African people. And so there's been this groundswell in Oakland, and it's contributed to the crisis in the city itself, where the Uhuru movement has been struggling locally to expose that nearly half, actually, if you count the overtime that the police get, over half the city's budget goes towards this militarized police force that polices communities of East and West Oakland who live in dire poverty, where one in five households in the city of Oakland as a whole, those households being in East and West Oakland where African and Mexican people live on less than $5,000 a year. And so this BART police killing that actually happened in Oakland at the Fruitvale BART station contributed to this crisis in the city, where there have been numerous police murders by the Oakland police that were just going, unresolved, no charges against the cops. In fact, the cops, you know, remain on the force. The most that happens is that the city actually pays $2.5 million is a figure we found a year, and that's just what we know about in police brutality settlements. And then just subsequent to the killing of Oscar Grant, there's been the uncovering of a police killing that happened in the year 2000 that was covered up by the internal affairs chief, where a man, Jerry Amaro, was kicked to death. It was covered up, and this sergeant was promoted to internal affairs chief. And this expose forced the police chief, Wayne Tucker, to resign. And so you had all this crisis already in the city, and then on March 21st, you had a situation with Lavelle Mixon, where we know for a fact that he resisted. He took a stand. He shot two police Oakland police officers, and it was what they called a routine traffic stop. And this Lavelle Mixon has come to represent the resistance of African people to the genocidal conditions that we can see the pattern. We see young African people facing these conditions, being having no employment, being swept up into the so-called criminal justice system. And Lavelle Mixon was one of these young men who faced no future except more years behind bars. So the Uhuru movement held him up as a hero. And this was a reflection of the African working class perspective, that no longer could people just see their brothers and sisters, fathers, uncles, just die on the streets day after day from the horizontal violence that's imposed, from the police killings, dying, just figuratively by being taken away from their families, isolated into these concentration camps in one of the third largest prison system in the world, which is what California is. And so, when the Uhuru movement held a vigil and a march, holding up Lavelle Mixon with a banner saying, "Oppression breeds resistance, resist police terror, stop the war on the black community," this was something that prevented the city from just going into an all-out attack on the African community. It forced the issue of the relationship that African people have to the state, to the police. This is historic. It goes back to 40 years ago when the Black Panther Party was created as the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense and defended the rights of the people to not live under police terror, police occupation. And this has been deeply challenging to people who are part of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. It's been challenging to people who've supported Uhuru Furniture, but it's also built new relationships with people who really understand that this is the right stand to take, that it's not what the Panthers were talking about was not some just theoretical question. When they said that the police were an occupying army in their community, they meant it.
Right.
And it's the same occupying army today. And, it's just total hypocrisy for us to say, well, we're against the U.S. war in Iraq or Afghanistan, but we're for the war on African people right here. Well, it's the same set of conditions and that the people face. And so the demand is economic development for the African community, and that situation with four officers being killed, because there were two others, as people know, killed, but we don't know if they were killed by Lavelle Mixon, and it's really beside the point in a certain way. We may never know. But what this has done with the killing of the four officers and Lavelle Mixon, it's brought to the surface the economic and political crisis in the city, and the fact that the city's budget is is in crisis because they're spending all the money on this war on the African community. And so I know I'm kind of going on a little bit, but I think some of those things are important to say, and that what we've seen just in some of our work and going to, just last Monday we went to a town hall meeting that is supposed to be about the people in the community, all of us having a say in the city's budget. And so we went there and we exposed this contradiction that you have an economic crisis that's in part, you know, we know that it's part of the overall crisis in the economy we live in, where the housing has collapsed because of the subprime mortgage. But we know that it's also tied to the amount of resources they're putting into this war on the African community, and that if we want to see peace, if we want to see justice, then we're going to have to demand that the city put resources into economic development and not into this war. So it's very encouraging to be out there and to see that, you know, we can really influence the discussion. And there were a number of people also speaking about the Port of Oakland, about the fact that why are they cutting these, you know, services in the libraries and rec centers when, you know, where is all this economic development money going? Because it's sort of like this secret budget of CETA mm-hmm. money where they can't really talk about it. But then you start to uncover where that some of this money is going, and it's going to private security forces. You know, it's going to promoting the recruitment of the police in the schools. You know, what I mean to say is they're putting money into, they call it grow our own. So they're trying to they're going into high schools and community colleges and speaking to African people from Oakland to encourage them to become police officers. So they're putting money into that. Yeah. And we don't want that at all. We want to support the ability for the community to develop their neighborhoods, to set up small businesses, to create programs that are going to feed their families, community gardening, economic development. That's really in the hands of the people. And so, it's really kicking off this war of ideas, because I think that people can see that there's no way out of this, you know, that there's deep poverty and oppression and it has to be addressed.
Yeah, absolutely.
The government's not going to lead out of it.
Right.
Exactly. There is a way out of it, but it's certainly not coming from, the city of Oakland or the U.S. government.
Yeah, which is exactly what the programs that the Uhuru Movement is leading. You know, it's the kind of threat that they pose to the government, is because they create that dual and contending power where the people are able to provide for themselves, you know, with more sustainable solutions without relying on the same system that oppresses them to feed them and organize these types of programs, which they don't. They don't take care of people. They just try to make as much profit as possible and oppress people in order to make that profit, as you pointed out. I appreciate that overview of what's happening in Oakland, Wendy, and I want to, you know, really encourage people who are in the Bay Area in California or any part of California to get involved in the Uhuru Solidarity Movement and the work that you all are leading on that front, and also to come to Philadelphia for the conference. And we're about at the halfway point of our show, and we're going to make some announcements, including about that conference. But I wanted to know if you wanted to put anything else out, you know, as a call for people to get involved in California, Wendy.
Definitely. So today there is an event called Earth Day at the Uhuru House, and it's I'll just read about it. African community is demanding genuine economic development. The seeds are being planted to build the Uhuru Community Freedom Garden. Come join us as we build the African Village Survival Initiative, tools that will grow the institutions that will feed the African community. hear from urban gardeners, holistic practitioners, massage therapists, and nutritional experts on how to live a vibrant and prosperous life. So that's happening today from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Uhuru House, which is at 7911 MacArthur in Oakland. And the number there is 510-569-9620. Also, tomorrow evening, we are going to be attending. It's a community town hall meeting on the 2009-2011 budget, City of Oakland. So I'd like to invite people who are in Oakland and the Bay Area to come out tomorrow, which is Monday, April 27th, 6:30 p.m. at the Lakeside Garden Center, which is 666 Bellevue Avenue in Oakland. It's across from Fairyland. And this will be another one of the meetings like the one I spoke about last Monday, where we have a chance to learn about the budget, but ask questions and, you know, raise our concerns. And then this Thursday, there's going to be a community forum called Two Oaklands, One Solution, Economic Development for the African Community and an End to the Policy of Police Containment. So that's Thursday, April 30th at 7 p.m. at the Humanist Hall, which is at 390 27th Street in Oakland. It's between Broadway and Telegraph. And it's going to be this discussion around the city's budget. Shenrique Attorney will be speaking, the local Uhuru Movement organizer, presenting on the current campaigns of the Uhuru Movement. Bakri Olatunji will be discussing some of the history of the Black Panther Party in Oakland and different struggles of the Uhuru Movement in Oakland. And I'll be presenting some about the roots of the crisis in the city of Oakland, and just like to welcome people into this discussion and to learn about the African Village Survival Initiative, which we're actually calling on people to join a committee to build a conference later in the summer that's really going to launch that on the East Coast, on the West Coast. And I look forward to being on the East Coast next weekend for the Uhuru Solidarity Movement Conference.
Great. Thank you, Wendy. Mm-hmm. Really appreciate the work that you're leading out there in the Solidarity Movement in Oakland, and we're just really looking forward to you and others coming to the conference on Saturday in Philadelphia. It's going to really transform us and the work that we're doing, and we appreciate you being on the show today, and we'll be discussing some more about the conference in just a few minutes. So thank you again, Wendy, and we'll see
you. All right, thank you.
See you this weekend. Uhuru.
Okay, see you this weekend. Okay, Uhuru.
Uhuru. Uhuru, you're listening to Solidarity Not Charity on uhururadio.com. We just want to remind people who are listening now that you can listen by phone if you go to uhururadio.com. There's a list of phone numbers for around the world, how you can listen through your cell phone to uhururadio.com live or hear the archives. In the U.S., you can call 425-905-1825. If you want to get involved in the discussion about the Uhuru Solidarity Movement on today's show, you can question or comment through email, dj@uhururadio.com. And on Skype, you can call in through the Skype ID, Uhuru Radio, that's all one word. And in the U.S., you can call 727-565-1599. And as Wendy Snyder from Oakland, California said, there's a few events going on right now in Oakland, California. For more information about those events, you can go to uhurusolidarity.org. And the main event that we are talking about on the show today in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on Saturday, May 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., is the Uhuru Solidarity Movement National Conference, which is just going to be really a significant and exciting event and conference and series of workshops that people can get involved in from wherever you are to bring back the tools and the analysis of the Uhuru Movement to organize in your area. And all are welcome. It is at the First Unitarian Church at 2125 Chestnut Street. For more information, you can call us at 215-387-0919 or email us at philly@uhurusolidarity.org. There's lots of information on the website at uhurusolidarity.org or apscuhuru.org. That will take you to the same thing. And if you're really interested in the conference, continue to listen to the show today and the next half hour, and call in and participate in this discussion with myself, Harris Daniels, and Allison Haney of the African People's Solidarity Committee and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement right here in Philly. So, Allie, we really want to talk about, you know, the situation in Philadelphia and why it's so significant that we're having this conference. And I just wanted to bring up a couple issues that we're aware of in Philly, is that they're building now in West Philly. They just did the groundbreaking for this $100 million brand new youth study center, which is essentially a youth prison. And they are advertising the fact that this is a green building. And, you know, we really want to talk about that. I know Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, has exposed and talked about a lot the green prisons that they're building in California, and just about how there can't be any kind of sustainable imperialism. There can't be any kind of green oppression, and about how this youth study center, which they're all really excited about in the city government as being this great, new, more humane, some of them are saying, way of locking up youth, is really, it's about the economic development for the city of Philadelphia and the state of Pennsylvania. So I know I was reading about that this week, about how, you know, like the council, the city council is saying that we will be the envy of the country when the city is, when the center is built. They're really, you know, building this up because it's a huge part of the economy. Do you have a comment on the Youth Study Center, Allie?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's outrageous. And I was just looking at an article on it, and it makes it look like it's a luxury spa or something.
Yeah.
They're building, you know? It's unbelievable. In fact, I wanted to read some of the article.
Sure,
if
please.
That's okay. Because, I mean, this is the imprisonment of African children that we're talking about. And I know that the U.S. is one of the only countries in the world that gives life sentences to children, you know. And Pennsylvania has 20% of those children locked up. And Philadelphia, you know, as we've been putting out for a long time now, has one of the highest prison populations in the entire world, percentage-wise. So this is huge business. It's a huge economy that, you know, is literally based on locking up African people and African children. And, yeah, they're promoting this new youth study center. For one thing, they demolished the old one, which was, I guess, 54-year-old building detention center in Center City, which was right by Whole Foods. And they demolished that one to build an art museum. So now they're bringing this to West Philly, and just to say, you know, we've been looking at the new Pew study of Philadelphia, and, you know, it has a whole analysis and statistical summation of the situation in Philly today. And that study, which just came out, it's a 2009 study, shows that poverty in Philadelphia has grown by 21% over the past few years. And it's just incredible, the poverty here. They're talking about up to 76% poverty in areas like right where they're building this children's prison,
right,
in West Philly and in North Philly in the African communities. And when they say poverty, they're talking about, I mean, I think the literal poverty level in the U.S. is a family of four living on $22,000 a year, which is absolutely ridiculous. There's no way you could live on that.
Right.
And, you know, that's before taxes are taken out. So here they are building a whole economy in the African community, you know, based on the police budget. Like Wendy was saying, it's the same exact thing in Philly, obviously, that neo-colonial Mayor Michael Nutter has just put forward the 2010 budget, which increases the resources for police containment, for prisons, for police, for the city jails, you know, for all of the containment of the African community, and it decreased the money that goes into the neighborhood development to only 6% of the budget. It's like nothing. They, you know, they put no money into the African community, as we were just discussing. So Let me just read a short part of this article on the Youth Study Center. What they euphemistically call a youth study center has nothing to do with studying. It's about imprisoning children.
Right.
So this is saying the Youth Study Center is a secure detention center that provides temporary care and custody for alleged and adjudicated delinquents aged 13 and over who are awaiting court action. Sounds so lovely. Its purpose is to provide protection to the community as well as a safe and secure setting for youth while ensuring residents are available for scheduled court hearings. The center admits approximately 6,000 youth annually for assessment and places and placement as directed by the courts. In praising the design of the new facility, Mayor Nutter noted, quote, "The new Youth Study Center reflects the city's commitment not only to protect the safety of Philadelphia residents, but also to help at-risk youth develop into productive, law-abiding citizens." And then it says that at 160,000 square feet, it will also be almost twice the size of the former center, which will alleviate overcrowding and provide more adequate space for juvenile housing, program administration, education, visitation, dining, indoor and outdoor recreation, medical, along with court and hearing rooms, as well as space for community meetings. We are thrilled to be breaking ground on a new youth study center that will enable DHS to provide better care and services to youth in detention. The thoughtful design of the center will allow us to enhance programming for youth and better ensure the security of youth, staff, and the community. The new building will also be cost-effective and environmentally friendly. Designed as the first LEED, which is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, Silver Rating, certified building to be constructed by the city, the facility is more energy efficient and will provide substantial cost saving in fuel consumption. Yeah, so this is how they're promoting it.
Yeah.
And it's outrageous. So yeah, this is a really important time that we're holding a first national Uhuru Solidarity Movement conference, and it's in Philadelphia, the city, you know, that dropped a bomb on the African community, murdering 11 African men, women, and children in 1985, and as the Uhuru movement is saying, is dropping a budget bomb on the African community today.
Right.
And it's really time, you know, we just see a real growing resistance from the African community led by the Uhuru movement here in Philly as well as nationally and internationally, and it's urgent that we build real solidarity from the white community to defend the rights of the African community that are coming under attack every day, you know, by the Nutter administration and by the U.S. government.
Uhuru. And it's just so important that the Uhuru Solidarity Movement is out there to really bust up this complicity that's in the white community. You know, in general, we don't want to see this kind of class peace where people are just going about their daily lives, you know, while all of this is going on. Because once we're aware of all this going on, we can't just go out
right.
and, you know, celebrate and just enjoy, you know, the lifestyle that we've been afforded by this oppression. We are advocating a real active stance of solidarity, which means so many things. I mean, it doesn't
mm-hmm.
have to be, you know, this thing where it's like you're either, you know, this miserable, depressed person because you know what's going on in the world and you feel powerless and you can't do anything about it, or you're acting as an oppressor yourself. There's this stance in which you can be part of this exciting work, and we really
right.
want this conference to be, you know, like the how-to, like the school, the teach-in for people who are interested in another way and seeing a better future. And that's why I'm really excited about it. I can't wait for next Saturday. And I want to just talk a little briefly about last Saturday, where we
mm-hmm.
had a very first ever Earth Day Fest and Flea Market in Philadelphia, which was a big part of the campaign to organize people into the Uhuru Solidarity Movement in Philadelphia and the surrounding region through the stance in solidarity with sustainability through liberation and self-determination for African and all oppressed people. You know, we have been holding flea markets for 5 years now in Clark Park in West Philly as a fundraiser for the programs of the Uhuru movement. But this is the first time we've had an Earth Day festival, and it was incredibly successful. And, you know, I do really want to appreciate and send out thanks to everyone who was a part of that, who may be listening now, because it took a lot of you know, community work and support from different organizations and businesses and, you know, yoga studios and restaurants who supported this basic idea that sustainability and environmental justice is only going to come through social justice, and that, you know, really supporting programs led by the African working class to solve their own problems in the economic crisis, that's sustainability and the path to a more sustainable future. So we had this incredible day where thousands of people, I think well over 2,000 people came through the park over the course of the day, and so many people, you know, were informed by Uhuru Solidarity Movement organizers about this conference and about, you know, what the work that we do is, and that really won a lot of support from people who may have not even heard of the Uhuru movement before. And as Wendy was saying, you know, it's a period in which things are really polarizing, you know, issues like, you know, resistance against the police and violence and the question of criminalizing the African community, you know, is really alienating some people who would rather side with imperialism, but it's also winning us a lot more allies. And I really saw the effect of that in the Earth Day campaign. And I was really, you know, honored to be a part of that process, and also the process of building the Uhuru Solidarity Movement Conference, which is going to continue to, you know, build that support and really bring people into the active solidarity work that we do. So you were there as well, Ali. What would you say, you know, was the effect of the Earth Day Festival?
The first annual Earth Day Festival and Flea Market. Yeah, I thought it was fantastic and, you know, really significant because it did, like you say, really bring together so many different aspects of the community in Philadelphia and in unity with, you know, understanding that this is the movement that's leading the way. This is the movement that's changing the world. And I think people really got that, even if they didn't know coming into the festival, as you say, so much about it, but it was such a beautiful but militant and powerful political and cultural, you know, just a fantastic day of workshops and speakers and music, and just really showed people and information, you know, that the Uhuru movement has the vision for the future, has the answers for the future and the programs that we can all participate in. You know, it gives North American people, white people like ourselves, a real concrete way to participate, and I think that was one of the things that was very powerful about Earth Day Festival, because, you know, it brought people who maybe came just thinking, you know, concern for the environment, concern for global warming or whatever, you know, aspect of it that they came to it from, and then deepened it a lot, gave them a much deeper analysis and understanding that, you know, what you've been saying, that there is no sustainable future based on imperialist war and prisons and, you know, an economy based on oppressing people and stealing their resources. It's not going to happen. It's not going to work any longer, for one thing. But as human beings, as white people, you know, who participated for 500 years in the oppression of other people, this is the time we have to jump off that oppression, that pedestal of oppression that we've been on. And I think that Earth Day Festival really gave people a deeper understanding of that and built a real deep prestige for the Uhuru movement, you know, deepened that in the community in Philadelphia, which I think is very significant because, as you say, the crisis is deepening. We see what happened in Oakland. We see the polarization. The resistance is going to really break out in this period. This is nothing yet, as Penny has said. You know, we haven't seen anything yet.
Right.
And we have to be prepared, and we have to know which side of this struggle we want to be on, and we have to, you know, keep deepening and broadening the base of white solidarity, you know, and allies, bringing allies, you know, into this movement to be part of the African Liberation Movement. And that's what this conference is about. I think Earth Day helped to do that. And now we want people to deepen that discussion, come out and really grapple with these ideas, with this understanding, get the African internationalist leadership and analysis from, you know, Chairman Omalia Shetela, from Irana Fasoma, who's going to be giving a workshop on the African Village Survival Initiative and how we can participate in that as white people, you know, and put our resources and put our stakes into future, you know, real sustainability based on self-determination for African people, you know, here and everywhere. So I think, and be part of an organization, because that's key. We have to be organized. We can't just be individuals out there fighting for ourselves or, you know, going back to the land that's stolen indigenous land. There's no other solution. We have to be part of a collective solution that's led by the African working class and by colonized people, you know, to really deeply overturn this system of oppression. And that's what's on the agenda.
Right. Right. Well, can we talk a little bit about the agenda in terms of, you know, what some of the specific workshops are? I know you mentioned the African Village Survival Initiative. You know, that's going to be really, you know, showing people what the on-the-ground sustainability and, as we were talking about, dual power, you know, the power led by the people themselves that, you know, is really giving the kinds of solutions to the economic crisis for Africans that they're not going to get from the government that is imposing those conditions on them. That's really going to be, you know, where people can see what a liberated African economy is going to look like. And, you know, see
and what our responsibility in that is, because we have the resources, you know. White power has stolen African people's resources. And, you know, everything is in our communities or we have access to it. And so that's why it's really important we're building a solidarity campaign with the African Village Survival Initiative, you know, and self-determination programs for African people, you know, so we can organize benefit concerts. We can bring all our skills and resources to support that effort. You know, we can donate seeds or collect seeds. We can donate solar panels. We can donate or find people who can help us to donate kitchen equipment, you know, for a professional kitchen or studio recording equipment for state-of-the-art recording studio for African liberation culture and analysis at the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Right.
We can bring our skills and our resources and our time to, you know, to really help to build self-determination programs of the African Village Survival Initiative. And that's what that workshop is going to open up and give people a real vision of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, people are going to want to know after hearing the presentations by Chairman Omali Eshetela and Irana Fofoma and Chairman Penny Hess, what they can do. So the whole afternoon of this conference is going to really focus on what it is that we do and what it is we're going to do in the future in this movement. So so that's part of it, the African Village Survival Initiative. And then there's a whole workshop on the political action campaigns, which I was, I'd like to see if we could speak about that for just a few minutes about, you know, how, like what Wendy was saying about in Oakland and what we're talking about in Philly, we're challenging our cities to stop this billion-dollar war of the police and prisons against the African community, of spending all of this money of the city and on oppression without any money on economic development. So we're taking that stand in our communities and really waging a campaign to win others to stand up against that kind of absolute attack on the African community, an economic and military attack. So that's going to be a lot of the focus of, you know, that workshop too, because we are a serious activist organization. We're not just, you know, we're not just talking about it, we're doing it. So you know, what we're asking people to do is join us in the front lines of that kind of campaign.
And really take out a war of ideas, because that's what we have to do right now. We have to influence, you know, the communities where we work and where we live and you know, just really, because even the discussion on the pirates that we started out with, the so-called Somali pirates, you know, that we were talking about, it's like we have such a big responsibility to decriminalize, you know, and stop the criminalization of the African people and allow, that's really what allows the system to keep locking Africans up and for police to keep murdering African people with impunity. There's no outcry from our community about that. And that's what we are building right now, is a real war of ideas so that people can start to align, you know, our ideas, understand that we get all of our ideas from imperialism right now, from white power, from a system that's oppressing African people and locking them up. What we want to do is open our minds to understand the point of view of African working class people worldwide and colonized people, Mexican people, you know, that are being stuffed in the prisons but are struggling for their liberation every day. And so, you know, this is a war of ideas, and we have a real part to play in that, and it's very exciting. And we want to do all kinds of actions and demonstrations and speak outs and, you know, conferences to really bring this kind of understanding, you know, to the white community and open up all kinds of avenues of support for the Uhuru movement, you know, in Philly and worldwide and nationally, because we're a national organization. There's going to be people coming to this conference from Boston, you know, from the Northeast region, from California and the West Coast, from St. Petersburg, Florida, and the Southeast. You know, so we're a national organization. We're going to take out this kind of campaign all over this country and
right.
and internationally as well.
Uhuru, yeah, and we really want people to go back to the areas that they're coming from armed with the, you know, analysis and the ability to organize.
Mm-hmm.
Because this conference
yeah.
is not only, you know, is not only an ability for people to come together and learn about the movement, but also to build the movement. And that's really going
right.
to be key to what comes out of this conference, is that the Uhuru Solidarity Movement really grows and becomes the standard stance for progressive people who want to be allies of, you know, a real movement for change. And
that's right.
and that it really sets the standard for how people are looking at the crisis of imperialism, you know, how people...
And we're a membership organization,
yes.
so people can be a member anywhere in the world.
Yes.
They don't have to be in the U.S. They could be in Australia, they could be in New Zealand or Canada or Azania, you know, I mean, they could be anywhere. Allies of African liberation can be are everywhere in the world and can be members of a Uhuru Solidarity Movement.
Yes.
So, yes. We're going to build this as a membership organization with thousands and thousands of people in unity with African liberation.
Yeah, and you know, people are listening right now through uhururadio.com. That's the power of the internet, and the internet's going to play a big role in building a Uhuru Solidarity Movement, because there are
yeah.
people who are unable to make it to the conference who are a part of a Uhuru Solidarity Movement, who can really use, you know, everything coming out of this conference and everything that we put out on our website and through, you know, social networking sites like Facebook, and really organize wherever they are. And that's how, you know, when Marcus Garvey organized the UNIA, they had a newspaper and grew to 11 million strong, and they didn't have the internet. But,
right.
you know, the Uhuru movement has grown internationally, and it's been really key to the success of the African Socialist International, that and, you know, really important on the ground organizing. But the internet is really going to be the, as they say, the rope to hang itself with that imperialism has, you know, bestowed on the people. And, you know, that's being used so critically by, you know, the African People's Socialist Party and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement alike in really organizing. So, you know, there'll be a lot, you're going to see a lot of transformation coming out of this conference in the way that Uhuru Solidarity Movement communicates with people through the web. And, you know, there's going to be a lot more, you know, building through that. And of course, people can join right now. If you're hearing this, you can join and you can register for the conference at our website at uhurusolidarity.org. That's U-H-U-R-U solidarity.org. And, you know, we really want to encourage people to do that and to come to the conference if at all possible, even if you're not sure if you can afford it right now. I think it's going to be the best amount of money that you invest in terms of, you know, really seeing yourself in the future and seeing yourself move with the times and being able to respond to the growing change in the world. So again, that's going to be Saturday, May 2nd in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's at 2125 Chestnut Street. It's the First Unitarian Church. And you can call us at 215-387-0919. Go to our website, uhurusolidarity.org, and get involved. Join Uhuru Solidarity Movement, come to the conference and we'll see you there. We're out of time for Solidarity Not Charity, but is there any last comment you want to make about the conference, about the movement, Allie?
I just want to say, even if you can't make it to Philly next weekend, you can join Uhuru Solidarity Movement and we will come to you.
Yes.
Wherever you are, somebody, I believe, just joined